So we're going to talk about PCR today. Now, PCR, which is an acronym for the polymerase chain reaction. And has anyone ever heard of PCR? I mean, has any of these people, any of you? Of course, people have heard of it. Where'd you learn about it?
In my high school biology class.
Good. Rest of you haven't really heard of it yet? Well, that's because you're young. PCR got almost famous among even non-biologists about 20 years ago during the O.J. Simpson trial. But that's been long enough that people are no longer talking about it. It was the trial of last century. But polymerase chain reaction is famous among biologists, and that's because it was a major breakthrough. PCR is a very useful technique to amplify the amount of DNA that you have. For whatever reason you have that DNA, PCR can make more of it for you. So, you know, for instance, if you take a sample of DNA from a crime scene, which is how it got famous in the OJ trial, there might or might not be very much DNA available at the crime scene. There might just be a tiny, tiny amount. Not enough to work with in order to do the necessary tests, for instance. And there might there's only enough for one test. But you have to do several different kinds of tests. Whatever the reason that you need DNA for, PCR can make it for you if you have just a little bit to start with. It doesn't make it out of nothing, of course. PCR copies DNA that you have, for whatever reason, and it copies the hell out of it. It doesn't just make a few extra copies. It makes up to billions of extra copies of it. So basically, as long as you have some DNA to put into the PCR process, you can spit out as much of that DNA, exact copies of it, as you want, as you need to work with. So it's very useful, and that's why it has many applications. These are just some examples. DNA sequencing, which is how we figure out what the actual nucleotide sequence is for an individual. This is what was done for years and years in what's called the Human Genome Project. Have you heard of the Human Genome Project?
Yeah.
Which was finished a while ago, but it took a decade to do just because there are so many nucleotides in just one human cell. But that's what DNA sequencing is. It's figuring out what the actual sequence of nucleotides is for a given species, in this case the human. Well, to do that, you need DNA to work with. You need enough to work with. Phylogeny refers to classification of organisms. There's different ways to classify organisms, but when you classify organisms based on their relationship throughout evolutionary history, in other words, when you say that two organisms, two species, are highly related because they branched off of one common species years ago, that's phylogeny. And you can do phylogeny different ways. You can do it by looking at organisms, for instance, and say, okay, look how similar they are. They must have come from a common ancestor pretty recently. But modern phylogeny uses DNA to demonstrate molecularly that two species are more closely related than either one of those and another one. That's, for instance, how we know that our closest living relative is chimpanzees. Their DNA is almost the same as ours. Very few differences. But unless you can go in there and look at the DNA, you can't tell that. And unless you have enough DNA to work with to be able to do that, you can't do that. Well, that's why PCR can come to the rescue. Diagnosis of genetic disorders, once again, you need a lot of DNA to do the tests. You can't work with a single molecule. Identity for forensic or paternity reasons, same thing. And all kinds of other things. Like I said, doesn't matter at all what you need DNA for. PCR can get it to you if you start out with some. So in these applications, it's not PCR that's accomplishing these. That just gives you the DNA to work with. Sequencing is its whole own process, and so on. Okay, so amplification is what PCR does, and that amplification is exponential. This is why it's so valuable. It's exponential, meaning that you don't just keep adding the same amount of DNA each time you do it. It multiplies, it doesn't add. Specifically, it's doubled every time you go through an iteration of the process. Every time you do it over, you have twice as much as you started with. So the first time you only double it. If you start out with just one molecule, you only have two molecules. But next time you have four, then eight, then 16, 32, 64, it doubles each time. That's exponential growth. And it doesn't take many iterations before you're starting to get into some real numbers. Some big numbers. That's why you can end up just after several hours with billions of copies of however much you started with. Exact copies, too. All right, now the process requires thermal cycling. The process in general requires cycling, meaning it does the same thing over and over, and each doubling that I'm talking about in the number, that is another cycle. But part of that cycle is changing the temperature. So the temperature goes up and down each cycle. And I'll explain why in a bit. But because when the people who eventually won the Nobel Prize for this figured this out originally, they were just doing this as chemical reactions in test tubes. So they were doing it by hand, basically, until they figured it out. Now, though, it has become so routine because it is done with just a little machine called a thermal cycler. Not even as big as the spectrophotometers that you use. Just a little box that you put your samples in, close it, the computer takes over, automatically makes the temperature go up and down for 40 cycles or so, and take your samples out, and there's billions of times more DNA than you started with. But because the temperature cycles, that's why we call the machine now that does PCR a thermal cycler. I already told you that it's doubled each cycle, and that's because PCR really, even though it is an in vitro technique, it mimics something that happens in vivo. Now, have you heard these phrases? In vitro, probably you've heard more than in vivo, because like in vitro fertilization, for instance, is one use of that. Literally, what this means is in glass. Vitreous is an adjective that means glassy. So in vitro got its name because you conduct chemical experiments in test tubes or some sort of glassware. But in vitro, really, it doesn't. Glass is not required. It's just how it got its name. In vitro refers to doing something outside of its natural setting, doing it in the lab. So, in other words, not having a cell. In this case, not having a cell do the job of doubling the DNA or copying the DNA, instead doing it in artificially out of the cell. Vivo means life or living, so in vivo would refer to a process that's actually occurring the way it naturally does in the cell. In other words, so PCR, really the idea behind it came from studying what happens in cells naturally. Right? We talked about the two major jobs of DNA. And what are those?
Indirectly code for a protein.
Right, and when that actually, what's the process called? When that job is being done? Transcription, that's one function of DNA. No, DNA does not involved in translation.
Self-replication.
Self-replication, exactly. That's why you have DNA. Self-replication refers to the fact that it can copy itself, right? So cells naturally are little DNA replication factories. And once we figure out how they do that, well, the guys who got the Nobel Prize for PCR figured we can take advantage of DNA's natural ability to copy itself by setting up a series of reactions outside of the cell that mimic what the cell is actually doing, but do it many times instead of just once, which a cell does. It only replicates once because it needs to double its DNA in order to split into two cells. PCR keeps going, does it again, and then again, and over, until you have billions of copies of DNA instead of just two. All right? Now, typically, PCR is used to amplify pieces of DNA that are about 10 kilobase base pairs in length. What is a base pair? Right. But two nitrogenous bases that aren't next to each other within a strand, right? They're not adjacent that way. They're on different strands. So one base pair refers to one position on the DNA. By the way, did I ever get back to your question during the quiz?
Oh, no.
What were you going to ask?
Oh, I had two questions. Oh, one was,
Independent assortment?
What if I just put independent dash that I have?
Yes, that is, I would count that half of half because there was a two-part question. Okay. Remind me, though, if you think of it. All right, so a base pair is just one position on the DNA strands. And it's a pair because there are two strands, right? Complementary to each other. Well, a sample of DNA can be any size. So if we, you know, if you get DNA from a crime scene, for instance, you might have entire chromosomes worth of DNA. One huge, complete DNA molecule with millions of nucleotides. But usually you don't use PCR to copy the entire DNA molecule. You're interested in just a fragment of it. And usually that fragment is about 10,000 base pairs. 10,000 out of millions. So just a fraction of it. And you can set this thing to run as long as you want, as long as you have enough raw materials in your little tubes that go into the thermal cycler. There's no limit to how much DNA you could make theoretically. But usually it's done about 40 times. And the reason that's usually enough is because since PCR doubles the amount of DNA each time, if everything went perfectly smoothly and you did actually double it fully each time, then you would have 2 to the 40th power times as many DNA strands as you originally had, or pieces. Well, what is 2 to the 40th power? No, it's not 80. It's 2 times 2 times 2 times 2, 40 times. Far more than 80,000. 80,000 is almost negligible compared to what 2 to the 40th is. Yeah, put it in your calculator. I think it comes out to be one shitload. But see what it is exactly. I used to have it memorized. What is it now?
1.09951162810.
Okay, 1.09 times 10 to the 12th. We'll just call that 1.1 times 10 to the 12th. That really, when you expand that, this is scientific notation, right?
Yeah.
If you expand that, that means it's 1, 1, and then 11 zeros. This is thousands, millions, billions. That's 1.1 trillion. 1.1 trillion times as much DNA as you started with if you let it go 40 cycles and everything goes well. Now, that's the theoretical maximum. Of course, not everything goes perfectly each cycle. So you don't get quite 1.1 trillion. Maybe you only get half of that, which was still 500 billion times as much DNA is still a big jump, considering that happens over the course of just several hours. All right, so that's why we only program the thermal cycler to run for about 40 cycles. The problem with going longer, even if you wanted more, is that you can't make DNA out of nothing. So you have to have the raw materials in your tubes to begin with, enough to make billions, hundreds of billions of copies. So if you run out of raw materials that you started with in your tube, running it more cycles doesn't produce any results, right? You only make DNA up to the point where you run out of the individual building blocks of the DNA. All right, let's go to slide 2. And since PCR is mimicking what happens in a cell naturally, let's review what's happening in a cell naturally during DNA replication. So this is a piece of double-stranded DNA in some cell that is undergoing DNA replication. And remember I said a long time ago that the two major functions of DNA, replication and transcription, both require reading a code. The code is the sequence of nucleotides in a strand, and therefore both of these functions require separating the two strands. Right? Can't read the sequence in one strand unless if it's still connected to the other strand. So the first part in DNA replication is separating these two strands from each other. What's holding these two strands together? Hydrogen bonding, exactly. That's occurring between what? What parts of the nucleotides? The nitrogenous bases, which are complementary to each other, right? If it's A on one strand, it's T in that position on the other strand, C with G. All right, well, you see that separation right here. It's already been separated here. It's about to be separated on the left here. And in a cell, what is responsible for breaking those hydrogen bonds, for separating the two strands? Enzymes, exactly. It's the green enzyme shown right here, which is helicase. Why is helicase named the way it is? Right. DNA is a double helix. So it's separating the two parts of the helix. Therefore, it's called helicase. ASE meaning it's an enzyme. All right, now, when the two strands are separated from each other, the next step is to have something put down on which you can build. Now, the overall goal here is to make a brand new DNA molecule, completely DNA, right? The problem is cells can't put new DNA down onto nothing. They can only add DNA nucleotides to something, to a strand that's already there. It can make it longer. And that's why this red thing here is RNA, not DNA, in a cell. This is an RNA primer. And we went over this, didn't we? Right, okay. So, primase is an enzyme that does that. Okay? That's what a cell does because the cell doesn't have any choice. It can't put down a DNA primer. But if a cell had a strand of DNA already, and it just happened to be complementary to this exposed strand, then that DNA primer would be able to stick onto there. It just doesn't have such a thing. All right? Well, in PCR, we're not going to use RNA, because if you use RNA, then you have to replace it later with DNA, right? Which is what a cell does. In PCR, instead, we're going to use DNA primers. But a primer is the first thing that's laid down. It's the first. It's the thing that recognizes a certain sequence on the original strand. Now, we talked about, in DNA replication, when we talked about DNA replication, we talked about it occurring in three phases. What were those phases? So I should have a comprehensive final? Initiation, good. Termination is the end. What's the one that comes in between? Well, what's happening in that middle phase? No, that's transcription. We're talking about DNA replication. Codons are transcription. We're talking about copying the DNA. Once you put that primer down, what is the next? What has to happen next? What? What's the cell have to do after that primer's laid down?
Build it?
Yes. How do you build that new strand?
Elongation.
Right? Elongation refers to what? What's elongation refer to?
Well, when it makes the thing longer.
It makes it longer. How does it make it longer, though?
Isn't it like all glucose?
Nothing to do with glucose. What? What is DNA made out of? No, it's not proteins. It is a nucleic acid, and what are nucleic acids made out of?
Monomers,
and what are those monomers called? No, the whole thing, the polymer is a nucleic acid. What are the monomers called? Nucleotides, good. Elongation refers to adding one nucleotide at a time, making it longer and longer and longer. Elongation, right? So those were the three in vivo phases, the naturally occurring, how a cell does it, initiation, elongation, and then termination. Well, we're going to talk about three phases that occur in each cycle of PCR as well, but they have different names. Slide 3. We've seen this slide before, right? This exact slide.
Yeah.
And which part of DNA replication is this? Well, look what's happening in the picture. No, this has nothing to do with transcription. This is DNA replication. So you need to get transcription out of your mind.
Sorry.
It's important, just not today.
Wait, is it starting out or is it ending?
Well, dark blue, remember, is the original stuff. Light blue is the new stuff. You already have some light blue stuff here. And you're bringing in another nucleotide.
It's
elongation. Yes. Yeah, but you said all three. All right, so how does the DNA know what the correct nucleotide next to use is? No? What do you mean by that?
Like if it's A, you put a T.
Where is the A if you're going to put a T?
Right there.
In the original strand. So that's how it knows, by reading the original strand, which is why that original strand had to be separated from the other one. Okay? So this is the A that's being read. That calls for a T in the new strand. And so that's what's coming in. But who can remember and tell me why, even though what you want is a nucleotide with one phosphate in it, what's coming in is a nucleotide that has three phosphates on it?
Because the phosphates like break off.
They do break off, as you see there. Why is that necessary, though? Right, to provide energy. Provide energy. Why is this an expensive process? Why does it require energy? Because you're building a big thing out of smaller things. That's called anabolism. Anabolism is building up bigger things out of smaller ones. That's why drugs that build you up are called anabolic steroids. The opposite of that, when you break a big thing down into a small one, is called catabolism. Well, when you catabolize something like your food, that releases energy. You can then use that energy to build things, big things, up out of small ones, which is anabolism. Well, DNA production, DNA replication, is anabolic, therefore it requires energy. And so you can't just bring in the tea, the sugar, and just one phosphate, even though that's what has to remain in the final product. You have to also bring some energy in, which is what those two extra phosphates provide. They provide the energy once you break the bonds, because the energy is stored in the bonds between the phosphates. Okay, remember talking about this?
Yeah.
That's why the extra two are spit off, and this nucleotide is stuck to the end. It's elongation. Now, what is DNA polymerase, the orange box? It's what? It is very important. It's not going to happen anytime soon without DNA polymerase. What is DNA polymerase?
It's an enzyme.
It is an enzyme, right. You can tell just by reading the name. ASE. It's called DNA polymerase because what it does is polymerize DNA. It makes a polymer of DNA out of monomers, nucleotides. So it creates the polymer out of the monomers. What?
No, I was saying, but it's an enzyme.
DNA polymerase is an enzyme. So DNA polymerase, like all proteins, is a protein. I mean, like all enzymes, is a protein. It's a protein that helps this process out. DNA polymerase is not being turned into DNA. It's just a protein that's there to allow this thing to happen. That's what enzymes do. Okay? But the raw material here, since you need energy to build it, the raw material is a nucleoside is millions of nucleoside triphosphates. Right? You have four different kinds, but each of the four kinds, you have many, many of them. And so by reading this A, the cell says, okay, now I need specifically a T-based nucleoside triphosphate. So it picks one of those, has many of them. The next one is it's reading a C, so it's going to have a G-based nucleoside triphosphate. Okay? And each time, two of those phosphates get cleaved off to provide the energy for hooking up a nucleotide to the growing chain. That's elongation as it occurs naturally within a cell. And this is what's going to be mimicked in polymerase chain reaction. Slide 4 shows you the four different kinds of nitrogenous bases in this first column. We've already talked about those. Adenine, guanine, cytosine, and thymine. Actually, there's five here because RNA also uses... RNA uses four of these and DNA uses four of these, right? RNA uses uracil instead of thymine. But since we're talking about DNA replication, you can just ignore the uracil row for now. The ones that DNA uses are adenine, guanine, thymine, and cytosine. So those are nitrogenous bases, which are just part of a nucleotide, right? One nucleotide is one monomer. It's one subunit of the DNA molecule, correct? But each monomer, each individual nucleotide, has three parts to it. Do you remember this? What are the three parts? Right. Each nucleotide is made up of a sugar, a nitrogenous base, and a phosphate. So you have the sugar, which is a pentose sugar, 5-carbon sugar. And in the case, if this is a DNA you're building, what is that sugar?
Deoxyribose.
Exactly. Connected to that sugar on one side is the nitrogenous base, which can be either A, T, C, or G. Connected on the other side of that sugar is what? A single phosphate group.
Right.
So that's one complete nucleotide. What makes it a nucleotide, though, is that it has a nitrogenous base and a sugar and some phosphate. There can be more than one phosphate, but there has to be at least one to make it a nucleotide. Now, if this thing did not have the phosphate, if all we had were the nitrogenous base and the sugar connected to each other, what do we call that instead of a nucleotide? I don't know whether I've told you this or not.
No, yeah.
That's called a nucleoside. Exactly the same word, except S instead of T. All right. Now, let me temporarily go back to slide 3, where we had this new raw material coming in. Notice it's called a nucleoside triphosphate. Just the T here and the sugar together is a nucleoside. Since it has three phosphates on it, that makes the whole thing a nucleoside triphosphate. Okay, it's going to be turned into a nucleoside monophosphate and stuck onto the end because two of the phosphates are going to be removed. But that's what a nucleoside is. It doesn't have the phosphates. And that's why on all these pictures of the nucleosides, you don't have any phosphate. Now, the third column is called deoxynucleosides. And that's because The difference between the third column and the second column is that the sugar in the third column is deoxyribose. The sugar in the second column is ribose. So this middle column, once again, applies only to RNA. And therefore, it's not what we're talking about here. But the only difference between RNA and DNA is the sugar. I mean, the only difference in the sugar used is this oxygen right here. Ribose has this oxygen. Deoxyribose does not have that oxygen. And that's why it's called deoxyribose, meaning ribose without an oxygen. All right, but anyway, these are nucleosides because notice they don't have a phosphate sticking off of the sugar. Okay, let's take a little break. Let's take a little break because when you come back, I want to show you the tests, and then we can finish this up. Well, there's not many slides left.